Judiciary, Wednesday, June 4th,
1960. Look at House Bill 2338, before anybody is called to... testify, I'd like to advise you that Senate Bill 198 is also in the legislature. It's in Ways and Means. It creates a council to propose new rules of civil procedure, and it's funded with $47,000. With that in mind, Mr. Beatty. Yes, sir. Would you state your name?
Senator Brown and members of the committee. My name is John Beatty from Portland. And I'm appearing here briefly to representing the Judicial Conference and along with another group of people that we've put together since late yesterday to come up. Frazier from Carl Neal from Portland, Burl Green from Portland, Dave Templeton, Larry Dean from Astoria, and Justice Tongue, who's in the back of the courtroom from Salem. We're all people from all parts of the bar and bench who are concerned with this proposal. I should point out, I know you've heard a lot about this before, I think I want to point out that the proposal to establish a procedural council with essentially a legislative veto on its adoption, on its rules which it adopts, is one which has been worked out very carefully over a period of time. Principle of the specific bill, which is before you today, the bill that came from the House, 2338, has already been approved by the House. It contains coming from the House in that form, it contains all of the amendments originally adopted to Senate Bill 198 by this committee, and it is in substantial form, and it was put into that form for the purpose of ensuring that when it did pass the House and came to the Senate, it would be in shape for this committee to then consider and get through at the close of the session. It does not carry an appropriation, and I'm not sure about what the situation is on 198. But we did assure the House that we would, and have, I think, also assured my correspondents in this committee that we will make this council work without drawing on public funds at this time. We expect to fund it simply by contributions from the judges and lawyers and people involved and by the assistance of the bar. We're prepared to do so, and I think I can assure the committee that at this point, you do not consider the appropriation essential, and I think it would be perhaps inappropriate for us to ask for one or acquiesce in one in view of the assurances that we gave in the House. I would state also that the proposal received the approval of the entire Judicial Conference with only one dissenting vote. It's been approved by the bar and various bar committees that are interested And it probably represents a consensus that no one would have thought possible for many years. We think it is a proposal that will be proved to be a very workable process in the coming years over a period of time. I think we all should bear in mind that the so-called piecemeal approach handling procedural changes has proved to be very difficult in recent years in straight across the country as courts come under increasing pressure in the volume of business which they have to deal with. The majority of states have already abandoned the piecemeal approach and adopted a rulemaking power in their respective Supreme Courts. This approach here will accomplish the result of having an integrated approach to making rules of procedure, but without entirely divesting the legislature of its of the power to exercise a veto, and it will include guarantee the input of trial judges and trial lawyers in the continuous process of making the procedure, rules of procedure work. I want to emphasize one thing for the committee. In Multnomah County in the first 4 months of this year, I'm sure the situation is undoubtedly comparable in the other populous counties, our criminal business, volume of business, was up something like 49%. When procedural changes are adopted piecemeal, whether in civil law or in criminal, civil procedure or in criminal, the impact on handling the docket is really never carefully considered. It is quite conceivable that piecemeal changes in civil procedure can result in a very substantial increase in judicial time required to handle specific business. And the impact of this can be felt very rapidly in the ability of a court system to handle the business before it. There is very little flexibility in a court system. There are no, you have a fixed number of judges, a fixed number of courtrooms, a fixed budget for court reporters and things of that nature. A sudden increase or change in the character of judicial business can swamp any of these court systems in more populous counties with all sorts of undesirable results. I think this bill will go far to ensuring that the kind of procedural changes we make in the future will be consistent with our ability to handle the business once it comes before the court. I think the relationship between the specific the counsel and some of the procedural changes that have been adopted, for example, or proposed this session, perhaps is something that we'll speak to in a little more detail than I can. Are there any questions of any of you?
Does anyone have any questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Green?
Chairman Brown, members of the committee, my name is Burroughs Green. I'm an attorney from Portland. I served as a so-called advisor with the Judicial Conference on this bill. I served on the Judicial Administration Committee, now on the Practice Procedure Committee there in the State Bar Office, which have supported this bill. I just want to make one point, and because there's many people here. There have been some procedural changes passed through this legislature, and because of that, there is some thought that maybe this particular bill is no longer necessary. I think for a while I kind of took that view myself, but I changed that. I think that some of the bills that were passed, such as the third-party practice, I personally am opposed to. I think it's going to double our docket. I think it's a problem that may, with a commission like this, a council set up like he's proposing this measure, there would be an immediate feedback from the populace, from the lawyers, from the judges, from that this council can get, we can, if the bill is a bad bill, it could be taken off as well as a good bill put on. And I agree with Judge Beatty that a group or the total picture can be seen, can be tested. It's going to be in all reaches of the state, have hearings being held. You'll get a solid procedural setup without having to come to the legislature each year with piecemeal legislation.
Question to Mr. Green. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Justice Tong, did you wish to say anything?
I didn't intend to make a statement. I hear only as an interested observer. The committee will remember that 2 years ago I did appear, and there was some criticism, I think, perhaps justified, of both judges and lawyers for all appearing and criticizing proposals that were made, and your committee and the legislature never offering anything constructive. This time, I think the judges and the lawyers have worked together and have come up with something that is not only constructive, but is the product of trial judges and trial lawyers, the ones who are most directly concerned with these problems, and it sets up a council in which trial lawyers and trial judges are directly represented, and I think that is a good feature of the proposal. It was approved by judicial counsel with only one dissenting vote. That conference, I should say, not council, only one. The conference, of course, includes judges of all levels, district court, circuit court, court of appeals, and Supreme Court.
Thank you very much, sir. Austin Crowe.
The only thing that I would like to add, Austin Crowe, Chairman of the Practical Procedure Committee, you recognize the amount of time that it's necessary in the bar when we come down here and on all these practice and procedure bills, and I think this would be a very constructive step in the future to set up the best possible procedure in the state. The only thing I should add is that in Bill 198, as I understand it, the appropriation, according to Mr. Haldane's conference with the Fiscal Committee, was deleted in their proposed changes, but that has not yet actually come out of Ways and Means, and it's the belief of everybody, I think unanimously, that the bill in its present form would be just exactly what we need. Thank you.
Mr. Haldane?
I really don't have a great deal to add. Douglas Haldane, Executive Secretary, Judicial Reform Commission.
When did you get that information?
It was the day before yesterday. I checked the legislative fiscal office, and that's best information I got from Mr. Barrows at that time. Nothing more definite than his statement over the telephone, but he did say the appropriation had been removed. There's 2 points I would like to make. I think we've gone over most of this. One thing has not been mentioned, of course, the Judicial Reform Commission did participate with the bar and the Judicial Conference in drafting this measure and Senate Bill 198. We all worked on it together. Judge Beatty mentioned that across the country, many states have gone to giving their Supreme Court, the highest court, the rulemaking power. But we take a different approach here in putting into a council that involves judges, trial judges and trial lawyers as well. I think it's important that in the most recent issue of the American Bar Association Journal, carried an article criticizing the federal rulemaking system on this very point and advocating that on the federal level, go to a system somewhat like this, the trial lawyers and trial judges too would be involved. Second thing, it's been mentioned that the procedural advances which have been made in this legislature might obviate the need for a council of this nature. In studying rulemaking, it became apparent to me that when Oregon adopted the field code in the 19th century, it was one of the most advanced codes of procedure at the time, of course. It came from New York, and in New York, after they adopted the field code, they were very diligent about updating that code in the legislature each time they got an opportunity. On the other hand, in Oregon, the field code stayed virtually unchanged for about 100 years. I see the place of this council primarily as performing the function of a continuing review. After we get a revision of the code, we get it in there, then this council will be able to that code updated on a year-by-year basis. Other than that, I'll be glad to answer any technical questions. About
questions to Mr. Haldane. Thank you very much, Mr. Haldane. Mr. Frazier?
Senator Brown, Senator Roberts, Senator.
The American Bar Association just recently held a seminar in London. It was held by British Barristers Association. I was fortunate enough to be one of the 200 American trial lawyers that were attended at that session. We were there at the suggestion of the Chief Justice of the United States that American trial lawyers were not as adequate as British trial lawyers. One of the things that ancillary benefits that I was able to ascertain while I was there was the fact that the British barristers, in effect, with the judges who are appointed from the barrister ranks, in essence, run their procedural system. I was mindful of that this morning when Chief Justice, or Justice Tongue, was discussing the fact that, and he said it, and it dawned on me that basically that was what we're suggesting here. In other words, it's the trial lawyers that are concerned with these procedural and rulemaking powers. We are the ones who become frustrated with the process. Now, it is easy to make the ancillary argument that these are, quote, lawyer bills. Now, and therefore lawyers are interested in them for solely those kinds of purposes. These are procedural rules that we are interested in that need to be packaged together. The last time I appeared before this committee, some of these other kinds of bills had not come out. For example, a summary judgment bill is now a reality. But I'll be very candid about it. Without interrogatories, it's a half piece of legislation because it's something we can use a summary judgment bill in the present situation. We can go through some promissory note situations, those kinds of cases. But without interrogatories, for example, the summary judgment bill is not as effective as it could be. Now, what we're just simply suggesting here is that what we want to do is to tone up the quality of the bar on a whole. And what happens is that there are certain lawyers, and the unanimity of the bar is very clear, but what can happen? Lawyers are effective advocates. And a particular bill that a lawyer doesn't like can come down and what we call the parade of horribles argument and defeat that in the legislature on a momentary whim. Now, what we're asking for is a total package, one where these kinds of horribles can be sifted out over a long period of time to determine what is for the good of the bar. Never, in my short years of practice, have I ever seen the bar so together in attempting to get legislation through that will benefit the bar. We each see little things on each bill that we like or don't like as things go through the procedures and the practice. We see abuses. We see these kinds of things. But totally speaking, when you think that this particular committee, and we talked about the balance of the committee and all those kinds of things, and the bill is packaged, and as you put it out earlier, is present. The only thing we're not asking for at this time are the dollars. Last Saturday, the Procedure and Practice Committee, of which I'm secretary, passed a resolution to the Oregon State Bar Board of Governors indicating that we think that they're looking, the Board of Bar Governors is already acting to determine whether or not the bar is prepared to fund the putting the secretarial staff and the necessary things to put this together. And our committee, with unanimity, said, yes, we are. We're prepared to go. Thank you.
Thank you. Larry Dean.
Senator Brown, members of the committee. I'm Larry Dean from Astoria, attorney from Astoria, and I've listed myself as the president of the Association of Trial Lawyers, Oregon Branch. I also served on the Judicial Conference Committee on Practice and Procedure, and I'm on the present Oregon Bar Procedure and Practice. I listed myself as president of the Oregon Trial Lawyers for the purpose of making the point and to cover something that Mr. Frazier just commented on. There are various interests within the bar. The trial attorneys who I represent would like to have certain pieces of legislation, certain practice and procedures that would be of benefit to us, but might not necessarily be of benefit to the defense bar. They might not necessarily be of benefit to the judiciary, to the judicial process. And but for self-interest, we encourage certain pieces of legislation because it's going to be of assistance to us. Mr. Fraser's comments about the summary judgment bill. Frankly, I think the trial attorneys, the trial bar, consisting of plaintiff's attorneys, would be opposed to that by a majority. I know that they are opposed to interrogatory, the interrogatory bill. So we have these various interests, and under the present program, it depends a lot on who's legislating the most, who's lobbying the most, as to what type of practice and procedure bill gets through.
That's true, and you haven't lobbied very much.
That's also true. The concern, the primary concern, I know of this committee and of the legislature, is about whether or not is the protection of the public's interest. And it's very difficult for members of the committee or members of the legislature who do not spend their days in trial and going through practice and procedure to be able to determine what is the best measure in regards to practice and procedure. We can assure you, and I can assure you from past experience, having served on these committees, that when you the makeup of this committee is going to consist of claimants' attorneys, defense attorneys. It's going to consist of the judiciary, members of the judiciary who are interested in expediting cases, moving cases along, moving the various procedures along. You have a bill, I believe it's still in committee, on submitting pleadings to the jury. That bill would, if passed, would eliminate a lot of time spent in hearings and trying to clean up those pleadings, both sides trying to clean up the other guy's pleadings in order to get to the jury. If you have a judicial conference committee, I can assure you that on procedure and practice, that the various interests of all the members of the public are going to be sufficiently protected.
Thank you, Mr. Dean. House Bill 2803, Mr. Newell.
Members of the committee, my name is Bill Newell. I'm chairman of the Board of Parole. I'd like to have Mr. McDonald, attorney, and our hearing officer sit up here with me. In relation to 2803, about 2 years ago, I had Mr. Scott McAllister, Attorney General's office, research the statute to see if we could impose restitution. And he came back in the affirmative, and as far as I can remember, I know of one case, possibly two cases, where we did impose a condition of restitution. However, this does present some very definite problems that I would like to bring forth at this time. Problems with the amount, problems with who does the parolee pay the money to, county clerk or the victim. Does the parole officer get involved as a collection agency? And there's factors to the what happens when the parolee loses his job, cannot pay the fee or the sum. Some of these factors have presented some real different problems. And also, in establishing the amount specified by the board, this will present some very definite problems. But we have been taking a very close look at this over the past couple of years, and we do feel we will be imposing a condition of restitution or compensation much more in the future. Ms. McDonald, would you like to relate to any practices?
Questions of these gentlemen? Senator Roberts.
Have you resolved the question?
Well, several times it has been imposed by the court, a certain amount of restitution or the damages.
But I mean, how are you going to, who takes care of the money and all that sort of thing?
So we've had it set up in one case where there was a definite amount and to be paid to the county clerk. This one case that I can remember. The probably desired, very much desired to pay this money back to the victim. But this is something we have not totally resolved, how to pay it, to whom, and the adjustments that will be necessary.
Would you foresee the possibility that there would be enough of this in the future that it would justify setting up a state compensation fund that they would pay into, and the state then state treasurer then would simply pay to the aggrieved party?
I can see this to be a very good move, yes. I don't like to see the board too involved in the collection. I don't think we should be in this area. So much, and the amount, this would be a real added burden to us.
Big questions. Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.